T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And be with and watch or whatever. So, you know, I'm doing the best that I can. I want to stay healthy, obviously, first and foremost. And my family, my immediate family, everyone is healthy, and that's good. We do, you know, social distancing, and I do a lot of FaceTime with my granddaughter, which is nice, and, you know, try to weather it and everything. So I guess I'm going to be doing a series of these with you guys and talking about different games throughout history and games that I played in.
Yeah,
that kind of leave history, and I know which game we're going to talk about today, and it's a game that's haunted me my entire career, and Matt Steinmetz will understand that, because Matt, I guess you have more basketball experience than anybody else in there, with the exception of me.
Yeah, well, I can remember, losing to Eastern York my senior year to this day, Jim, and I missed a foul shot with 15 seconds to go. There you go. That could have sealed
there
it.
There you go. Dwell on all the great shots you made. You dwell on the shots you missed.
let me tell everybody, let me set up the game for everybody. It is the Eastern Conference Finals, 1967. Jim, you're a rookie on the Celtics, and you're playing with Bill Russell and John Havlicek and Casey Jones and legends of the game, and you're going up against the Philadelphia 76ers, who many call that team that year one of the greatest of all time. Wilt Chamberlain, Chet Walker, Hal Greer, Luke Jackson, Billy Cunningham. So you're down 0-1, and it's game two, and this is the game that haunts you. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to have to set it up and let people understand that there were 10 teams in the league then, my rookie year. And that was the last year that they did not play, they played 81 games. You played everybody 9 times. So from that second year on in my career and up till right now, it's an 82-game schedule. So that was the last year they didn't play an 82-game schedule in the entire NBA. And I have to also, you know, help educate a little bit. Yes, I was their number one draft pick, but my contract was what Red Auerbach gave me, which I believe it was after talking with friends and people who had been drafted that same year, Kazzy Russell, of course, who was one of my teammates with the Warriors, and Dave Bing, and of course, they went 1 and 2 in the draft. Other people, Clyde Lee went number 3, by the way, former Warrior, and my best friend, I might say. I was the lowest paid number one draft pick because Red Auerbach was one chief SOB, and I don't mind saying that. And it was take it or leave it, and I made $11,000 and a $500 signing bonus. And playing with that Celtic team, I've got to preface it this way. I was very intimidated. You know, not a guaranteed contract.
Right.
I had to make the team in training camp and make that club, and they had won 8 straight championships. And it was the great Bill Russell. Unfortunately, he was his first year as player coach. He was a delight to play for and a delight to be around. And Sam Jones and John Havlicek and all those great guys, and Larry Siegfried, Wayne Embry, it was great to be around them. But the whole thing, their whole year was on the line in that series, of course. We had knocked off New York in the previous series. By the way, it was a best of 5, and
right.
I think it was 3-1 against New York. And now we're in the, you know, with the few teams that they had, now we're in a 7-game series for the Eastern Conference Championship. And, of course, The 76ers had Wilt Chamberlain, among others. We can talk about him later. But they were 67-15. The Celtics were 60-21 that year. And did I say 67-15? You know what? They were 68-13, I believe, the Sixers. I'm doing that by memory, and I think that's what it is. 68-13, that makes 81. So we had dropped that first game. And, you know, I didn't play a lot that rookie year. And let me tell you, when I did play, I was nervous, very nervous. And I had never been so nervous in any game than that game. We're talking about game two of the Eastern Conference Finals. But the Celtics were so they could see they were in trouble. Bill Russell could see they were in trouble. They were so desperate that I got to play 9 minutes in that playoff game. And, of course, I didn't help them much shooting 2 of 9 from the field. And, you know, I've had games with other teams, games with the Warriors. I remember the first time I ever got over 30 in a game, I was playing for the San Diego Rockets, and I had 36 points. I'd never had a 30-point game before. I had 28 in the second half. I remember one shot in that game, and it was a shot from the right baseline over Jack Maron. And that's the only thing I remember in that game. But I remember a lot about this game. And I stayed in there because I was playing some defense, and we needed some of that. And Sam Jones wasn't a great defender. Casey Jones was, but he was 35 years old. So I got in crunch moments. And I know this. I remember a drive I made in the first half, and I was so nervous. I went from right to left and got into the lane, and Wilt was there. And I knew I had to finger roll it real quickly and out quick him on the shot and get it up before he could get a chance to go block it. And I thought I was shooting it over the front of the rim because I was only about 6 feet away from the basket. I was going to do a little finger roll, jump real fast. I thought it was going to go right over the front of the rim and in. And I was so charged up, it hit the backboard and went in. So I missed the shot by about 2 feet, but it went in. And I thought, oh, man, I'm in trouble. So anyway.
That means you had some adrenaline going.
Oh, I had adrenaline going. And I remember this, Wally Jones and Hal Greer were taking the ball out of bounds. We were full court pressing, and it was 103-102. And I was overplaying, and they threw the ball in. I was guarding the out-of-bounds player, and that was Hal Greer. And I deflected it off my wrist as he tried to get it in. And it went out towards half court. I believe Havlicek secured the ball, threw it over to me. Now, I'm wide open at the free throw line. I did not want to shoot this ball. We were down 103-102. Ooh. I threw it cross court a little bit to Casey Jones, who was on the other side. Casey's not a shooter. And I remember this vividly. He took the ball, twirled it up in the air in front of him, just about a foot up in the air, and twirled it, caught it again, and threw it back to me, a two-hand chest pass, and said, shoot the damn ball.
Oh, my gosh.
So I took about a 16-footer. That's verbatim exactly what he said, and it's exactly what he did. And I took a little jump shot. It hit the back of the rim, the front of the rim, bounced up, and then hit the back of the rim and out. Would have put us up by one. I'm not saying, you know, we'd have won the game. As it turned out, we lost that game 107-102. I took a picture of the stat sheet. I'm not looking at it now. I think I've got it pretty well memorized. But I did not, you know, I had a chance. They were, of course, how could I get 9 shots in 9 minutes? Because they're guarding Sam Jones, and they're guarding Russell, and they're guarding Havlicek, and they're not worried about me.
Right.
They weren't worried about me. And so obviously they didn't have to be worried about me. But that's one of the games I remember in my entire career, and I've had a lot of great games. You know, you had a 30-point game or a 40-point game, and it haunts me still. I don't know whether we would ever salvage the series or not, but if it had come and been 1-1, at least you have a chance there. But so the eighth straight championship stopped, and of course I went in expansion draft of the San Diego Rockets, and the Celtics went on to win 2 more after that. So they won 10 of 11 years, and the 1 year they lost was when I was there.
Jim, you mentioned the word intimidation, and you're a bright-eyed rookie. You're playing with Russell, arguably the best player to ever do it, Havlicek, as you mentioned. And I just want to ask, when you say intimidation, How long did that take for you to get over? And do you see it in today's game where you have role players and rookies who, as average fans like myself, we're watching the game and we expect them to just, oh, they're playing with LeBron. They're playing with Steph Curry. There will be no curve. How rough is that? And do you think players have succumbed to that, to where they're playing with greatness? They never really get comfortable to show their real who they are as a basketball player.
And Guru, the ones that don't get comfortable play themselves out of the league. That's what happens. Sooner or later, you've got to step up, and you've got to either do it or someone else will do it for you.
Mm.
And that's the way it was. I played 11 years. I never had a guaranteed contract, and it's no difference today. You guys come in. Look how many players the Warriors basically tried out this year, trying to put something together with this team. And with all the injuries they had and opportunities for players, coming in. And there are guys that can handle it, and there are others that can't. But they usually, if you're a high draft pick, you're going to figure out how to do it. Most of these guys have gone through, they've had pressure on them before, and they're a high draft pick for a reason. And so they're going to find it. They might have the jitters at first, but definitely there are people that come in and you can see the intimidation. You can see the mistakes that they make. You can see them not trying to do too much, trying to play without making a mistake. It's on their face. It's on their play. It's on the way, their body language and everything they do there.
Jim, not to cut you off, Jim, do you think Patrick McCaw was dealing with some of that with his tenure here at the Golden State Warriors?
Well, he certainly didn't seem to be dealing with it his first year. He got to play some minutes, and I thought composed himself pretty well. I thought later on, it's a strange scenario there, and I hate to make a judgment on someone like that without really knowing and saying that because I've seen him play, and I do know that a lot of times, and I think with Patrick, how I notice it, is he was afraid to take the shot, or he didn't. Let's say this. That's a judgment right there, and I can't say was he afraid. It's not a thing to say.
Right.
I know this. I'm afraid to take shots sometimes. That my rookie year, but especially in a playoff game like of the magnitude that one was that we're talking about today, I would see him reluctant to take shots, and be reluctant to take shots, and that's kind of a sign.
Right. Jim Barnett here on 95.7 The Game. Jim, JB, first of all, I wouldn't feel bad about that game two performance because Casey Jones went 1-for-8.
Yeah.
Sam Jones was 3-for-16. So don't be so hard on yourself, JB. But I wanted to ask you about this doubleheader you told me about a couple years ago. I want you to share it with Steiny and Goo because I thought it was fascinating. I believe you were with the San Diego Rockets, and there was a doubleheader in Houston, I believe, involving four teams where you guys, I think you guys forgot your uniforms or somebody forgot their uniforms.
Yeah.
You had to wear the other team uniforms, JB. You want to share that story?
Yes, I do. We used to play doubleheaders a lot, even in the Boston Garden. We would play, Philadelphia, and the Harlem Globetrotters might play the first game. We might play in Detroit, and I remember playing with the San Diego Rockets, and we played Baltimore Bullets in the first game in Detroit, first time I ever played against Earl Monroe. And the second game was Detroit against whomever. It might be against the San Francisco Warriors. It might be against the Philadelphia 76ers, whomever. And so there were a lot of doubleheaders in those days. And this doubleheader, we used to play games in neutral cities, and obviously there was no Houston Rockets team at that time. We were San Diego Rockets. This was prior. They were in San Diego for 3 years before they moved to Houston. And I went from the Celtics to that expansion San Diego Rocket team. And then that also, that same year, was the Seattle Sonics. So the league went from 10 teams to 12 teams my second year in the league. So what that game was all set up was, and that was actually my third year in the league because Elvin Hayes was a rookie. And this was going to be a big battle. He'd gone to the University of Houston.
Right.
And it could be the first matchup, although I think they played before, but this was going to be a matchup with Bill Russell and Elvin Hayes. These two great centers, the old guard and the new guard coming in. Because as a rookie, my teammate Elvin Hayes led the league in scoring a little over 27 points a game. He came in immediately and could score and could rebound and everything like that. So what we did is we were going to play the second game. We're the featured game, and they played in the Superdome, you know, where they play football. And they did not, this is how archaic it was. They did not bring any seats out to, you know, to the basketball court. They put a basketball court in the middle of the football field, and they let people sit in the stands like they were watching a football game. So the closest fans were 50 yards away. Okay? So it was a doubleheader, and the Warriors played the first game. San Francisco Warriors played the first game, and I think they played Detroit Pistons. I could be wrong about that. But the second game was going to be the Boston Celtics and the San Diego Rockets. Now, we were the home team as being San Diego. They made us the home team. But our road uniforms, our colors were green and white and gold. Well, the Celtics are green and white. They brought their road uniforms. They're on the road. They're on a West Coast trip. They brought the green uniform. Well, we brought our green uniforms, and we were told to do so. And we had to take care of, by the way, our own uniforms on the road. We washed them ourselves at home or in a sink on the road. If you're on a 6-7 game road trip, you wash it out yourself, dry it, whatever way you can. We had to do our own and carry your own shoes and everything like that. So what happened is the Warriors were wearing their home gold uniforms playing. They were the home team. Well, both of the next game we're going to wear green uniforms. That doesn't work. And so we had to wait for the first game to get over, and we were going to wear the San Francisco Warriors uniforms when they got through the game, and then we would be, you know, green against the gold. Perfect. The trouble is, those uniforms were, for the most part, pretty sweaty. And we were all struggling and fighting to see who would get first choice.
Who didn't play in the first game?
I beg your pardon?
I said, you're looking for guys who didn't play in the first game.
Yeah, to get a dry jersey. Well, the luck would have it, I got Joe Ellis. And Joe Ellis was a guy that went to USF, and he played 8 years in the league, all with the Warriors. He still lives in the city, as everyone knows. But he had a hell of a game, and he might have had 38 in the game. And so it was just dripping wet. It was just dripping wet. Yeah, he had a big game. It was just sloppy. And that's the jersey I got. And so I had to, and you know how hard it is to put on a wet jersey?
Oh.
You know, awesome. Oh, sweat.
So I'm squirming now.
We went out with jerseys that had already been played for 48 minutes and played the Celtics in that game.
Hey, Jim.
I didn't look up the stat sheet. I had a big game. I know this. There's no depth perception if you're out in the middle of a football field shooting a basketball goal and there's no background. And so
right.
I knew immediately, when I warmed up, hell, I'm shooting air balls and what have you, I knew I was going to drive to the basket and get layups, which I did. And I might have gotten 30 in that game. I might have gotten 31 in that game. You guys can correct me. Somebody look it up real quickly. I know I had a pretty big game against Russell. And I hope I'm not exaggerating, but anyway, because I remember laughing about it, but I've forgotten the story. But the jersey, I think, went for like 58 that night, or 59. Or
oh, 50. I got you. Yeah,
the jersey went for 59, I think, that night.
Hey, Jim, Guru was talking about, back in the day, and the thing that he was blown away by was hearing that pro players had jobs in the off season. Did you?
Yes, well, but my first year, and that's the best thing that ever happened to me, by the way, that Red Auerbach did for me. When I signed my contract, I also signed to go to the National Guard, Massachusetts National Guard, and he had a connection there because basically it was tough to get into a reserve unit because of the Vietnam War, and everybody got out of college. You had a lottery system, and you could get drafted for 2 years.
Right.
Beard, you know, my good friend, former Warrior, former roommate of mine in New York for a couple of years, still one of my great friends. He got drafted and he had to go to the Army. And so guys missed, you know, the first couple of years of their career during that time. And I got into the National Guard. And so I would go, you know, on weekend duty and I had to go to summer camp. So my first year in between the Celtics and the San Diego Rockets, I had to spend 4 months at Fort Dix, New Jersey for active duty training. And got traded to San Diego, or got expansion draft. And so I joined the California National Guard there. it's a 6-year thing. It was an obligation. I was glad when that was all through. But after that, yeah, my first year in San Diego in the summertime, I have a degree in recreation management from the University of Oregon, and I was a playground leader. I went to the park and recreation department, and I made $14,000 my second year in the league. I didn't need to get a full-time job, but I did get a job in the summertime. Oh, that's right. I forgot. That first year, I sold life insurance. I forgot about that. I sold life insurance for the Phoenix Mutual Life Insurance Company, and it was one of the bigger companies. And I sold, ready for this? I made $14,000 that year. I sold Elvin Hayes a $100,000 whole life policy. My first year commission on it was $953, which was a lot of
wow.
So that was a hell of an off season job.
Hey Jim, and I'm going to let Guru go after this. Is it possible I once bought a watch from you?
Oh yeah, yes, I got you one for cost because I worked
exactly.
I worked for a promotion company after I got out of the NBA in Oakland, San Francisco, you know, in the Bay Area. I did that for 20 years. I was a straight commission salesman for a company called Jack Nadel Incorporated. So, you know, sometimes I sold 50,000 pins with an imprint on it to Chevron or Fireman's Fund and different things like that. So if you wanted a cross pin or something, yes, I could get it at cost.
Yeah, that was a good watch. Go ahead, Goo.
Hey, Jim. Yesterday we had a very spirited discussion because all three of us were talking about great players and you know when they show up big in moments. And I want to preference what I'm about to say. I know I'm long winded, but I'll condense it here. I think Steph Curry, to me, Jim, is the best shooter I've ever seen. I know he's clutch. You know he's clutch. You've been on games. I've heard you do the games. And if you don't mind, I'd like to take you back to Game 6 last year where the Warriors lost to Toronto, unfortunately. But they had 9 seconds left, Jim. They called the play, and there was some turbulence on the play. Iguodala inbounded the ball. Draymond did a great job saving the ball. But Steph came off a pick from Boogie, and he got a look at it. And now that we're dealing with, you know, what we're dealing with the coronavirus, they're showing the games back, Jim. And I saw this game like 3 or 4 times. And I know not one player can make every shot, but I told the fellas yesterday, and I was kind of passionate about it. I said, you know what, guys? I think the Steph I know, I think that was a makeable shot. And Bontan Stein, he told me, you know what? It was a difficult shot, and Ibaka was out there, Van Vliet was out there. But Jim, I hold Steph Curry on this pedestal, and I keep watching it. I want to ask you, Jim, when you drove home from the arena that night, how would you grade that shot in degree of difficulty for Steph?
Yeah, I remember. This is the game where Klay Thompson got hurt, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember the shot. I've seen the shot. Most guys miss that shot, but I was surprised he missed it. Let me just say that.
Okay, all right.
I was surprised that he missed the shot. No blame, no fingers pointing at all. And it wasn't an easy shot. I don't think I'd have ever made it.
I got you. I'm with you, Jim.
Yeah, Jim.
Go ahead.
I think we're on the same page. I mean, could he make it? Of course he could. I thought it was a tough shot.
Yeah, it wasn't open and easy. And plus, he didn't have all that confidence in the world going for him at the time, right?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. He was struggling a little bit. Real quick, JB, I did bring up that box score. It was at the Astrodome in Houston. You dropped 31 points. Elvin Hayes, 32 points, 23 rebounds. You guys beat the Celtics, who ended up winning the championship that year over the LA Lakers in 7 when Jack Kincaid had the balloons in the forum up in on the ceiling. 135-126, you guys beat the Celtics. JB with 31 in that game at the Astrodome.
What'd he shoot from the field?
It doesn't say. It just says you made 12 field goals, but it doesn't have the field goal attempts. But JB, 7 of 10. You missed 3 free throws that day. You were 7 of 10 from the free throw line that night, JB.
You know, it's funny. Every time I scored big, you know, my career high is 42. I'm just going to say this, but I went 6 for 10 from the line that night. It really kicked me off. But here's what surprises me: I thought we lost that game. I can't believe I thought we lost that game. When you said that the Rockets won, I'm totally shocked.
Yeah, 135-126, JB. You guys had a big third quarter, outscoring the Celtics 46-25 in the third quarter.
Well, I'll tell you what. I have to say, in retrospect, to score 31, especially against a Russell a team that's anchored by Bill Russell, yeah, that was one of my better games because I didn't do that every night, for sure. We know that.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much for joining us. This is going to be a hoot. Really, I love it. I love it, and thank you for being generous with your time.
We're going to do some more of these. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. That is correct.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Well, that's going to be fun. I'll be prepared. So that's super. I really appreciate it, and thanks for having me on. And it's been a long dry spell since I've been on 95.7.
Well, you're about to make up. You're about to get a little flurry coming from Jim Barnett. So stay healthy, Jim.
Okay.
All right. That's Jim Barnett. That's need I say more? That was Jim Barnett. Here's what's coming up on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by O'Donnell Financial. Just we'll bat around. If anybody out there, 888-957-9570. You got anything on your mind after hearing Jim Barnett telling stories for a half hour? We'd love to discuss it with you. That's a lot of fun. So if you want to go play the Jim Barnett sound back or that interview back, all you have to do is go to the app and move back the time about a half hour, and you'll be able to hear the entire interview. By the way, can I get a breaking news sounder?
95.7 The Game breaking news. Powered by Radio.com Sports and brought to you by 5-Hour Energy Shots. Now in two great tropical flavors.
Okay, so we have a new record. We have a new record. The longest question in the history of the Bonte Steiny Guru Show. It has beaten his old question. He was the previous record holder for longest question.
Yeah, Ross, I'm with you. You were spot on. Wow.
And he shattered that moments ago by 13 seconds. Let's take a listen to the longest question in the history.
I'm starting to
take.
Hey, Jim. Yesterday we had a very spirited discussion because all three of us were talking about great players and you know when they show up big in moments. And I want to preference what I'm about to say. I know I'm long winded, but I'll condense it here. I think Steph Curry, to me, Jim, is the best shooter I've ever seen. I know he's clutch. You've been on games. I've heard you do the games. And if you don't mind, I'd like to take you back to Game 6 last year where the Warriors lost to Toronto, unfortunately. But they had 9 seconds left, Jim. They called the play, and there was some turbulence on the play. Iguodala inbounded the ball.
What happened?
Draymond did a great job saving the ball.
What else happened?
A pick from Boogie, and he got a look at it. And now that we're dealing with, you know, what we're dealing with the coronavirus, they're showing the games back.
Oh, coronavirus!
Like three or four times. And I know not one player can make every shot, but I told the fellas, and I was kind of passionate about it. I said, you know what, guys?
Monte helped me make a shot.
And Bontan Steiny told me, you know what? It was a difficult shot, and
unbelievable.
Ibaka was out there, Van Vliet was out there, but Jim,
were they?
I hold Steph Curry on this pedestal, and I keep watching it. I want to ask you, Jim, when you drove home from the arena that night, how would you grade that shot in degree of difficulty for Steph?
Is it over? Can I get, all right, how long was the question? It is a new record. Nash, how long was the question?
A whopping 91 seconds, over a minute and a half.
Oh, my.
It was a minute and a half. No way. Oh, Steiny. Steiny, we got to break this question down, man.
Oh, my
God. Because there were
so many. Hey, Jim.
I heard you do the games. Where do you start?
Hey, Jim.
This is going to be like DiMaggio's hitting streak. This one's not going to be broken for a long time.
Hey, man, he said at the top, I'm going to condense it because I'm long-winded.
Hey, what did you say? No, Van Fleet were out there, huh? No, they were out there.
Hurts, man.
I said Ibaka. Oh.
My heart hurts. My heart hurts.
Yeah. How about this?
Oh, I'm sorry.
How about this?
Hey, Jim.
That shot Curry got the end of game six, you think that was a good shot?
Thank you, Stoddy. Jim, subconsciously, I didn't want to come off, and he said it. I didn't want to be pointing fingers at Curry. So I felt like I was saying all that so it would come off that I wasn't pointing fingers at Curry. 91 seconds.
Oh my Lord.
Put it this way, man. You know, somebody Stoddy. Was coming. Somebody was driving to Oakland. You know, that story started. They were in Richmond.
The question.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Hey, which one of you said put the clock on it, though?
I did. I said put the clock on it in the group chat at about a minute.
Because some can slip through the crack, but that one did. And I said, oh, I'm in trouble.
All right.
I did, too. I can't. I mean, there's Stoddy. I heard you do the games. Van Vliet and Ibaka's out there. I mean, there was so many. He described the whole play, the inbounds play, the screens.
I mentioned the coronavirus, too. I threw that.
That was unbelievable. That was unbelievable.
I don't know if my heart can take it, Stoddy. It's your call if you want to hear that question again.
Hey, Jim.
I tell you what. Here's what we should do. If we can do this. I got an idea. From the Bonte Stoddy Guru account on Twitter, tweet that out with the app as a way to use the rewind feature. All they have to do is go to 12:35 today.
I'll post and the exact it, link on bill on it the as Bonte the longest Stoddy Guru Twitter account.
Yeah, just bill it as the longest question in the history of the show.
Was it a song, fellas? What was I doing, man?
Hey, Stoddy, right before your G chat, where you said put the clock on that question, seconds earlier, I said how many seconds? Because we know Jim Barnett. We love Jim Barnett. I think he's an underrated ambassador for the NBA.
Yeah, I can't wait to have him on next week.
Yeah, I know he could be long-winded at times. But I wonder what JB was thinking when Guru kept going on and on and on. Like, you almost put JB to sleep, man.
Oh, man. I mean, the good thing was I finished my taxes during that question. So.
A couple babies born, Stoddy.
Holy Toledo. All right.
Reset from that side. I don't know where you can go. Where can we go after that?
We can go to some Jim Barnett stories. How about
Jim? I'm embarrassed laughing.
Hey, Jim. I heard you do the games.
Bluntly, I'm sick of it.
Where's that? Ooh, that's a good drop.
I'm just going to put it bluntly. I'm sick of it.
Yeah, but we're on to Cincinnati.
Oh, my gosh.
Jennifer Saturday, real quick, Stoddy. Jennifer Saturday on Twitter saying, cry laughing at Bonte Stoddy Guru. Thank you for that 91-second question, Guru. Still laughing. Still laughing at it.
Hey, Jim. Stop it, y'all. Stop. Go ahead, Stoddy.
Oh, man. Well, okay. Here we go. Here we go, show. Here we go. We got to move on.
Jimmy.
So, we'll do this. So, did you guys see Connor Letourneau's article in the Chronicle about the Warriors?
Yeah.
Essentially saying the Warriors, according to his sources, it doesn't look like they want Wiseman or LaMelo Ball. They like Anthony Edwards, the two-guard out of Georgia. Any thoughts?
Oh, interesting. Real quick, Goo.
Take your time. I'm in time.
I'll let you catch your breath for that 91-second question. You may want to recharge a little bit. Maybe it's time to eat some lunch from your lovely wife, Mia. Maybe she could bring you a sandwich or something. Anthony Edwards, Letourneau has a little capsule here. If the Warriors land number one pick, they'll be open to trading it. But if they don't receive a worthy offer, it will likely take Edwards with the top selection. Which, all right, Edwards 6'3 right now. I thought he was more like 6'5, but
I thought he was 6'5.
Yeah, I thought he was 6'5 here too, but it says 6'3 here in Letourneau's story. But he looks more like 6'5, 6'6 to me personally. 225. He could jump up. He could jump. He has hops for days. His shot was a little inconsistent, 29% from the 3-point line. But what I thought about, fellas, was okay, if they take Edwards, what does that mean long-term for Andrew Wiggins? Because you would have to think that Edwards okay, at 6'5", would play the same position as Andrew Wiggins. So it's intriguing, but it tells me that the Warriors are probably looking to deal this pick and move out from the top spot.
Well, I'm going to steal this from both of you because, Bonte, I think you were the first one that said it last week when we had this discussion. And I love Connor Letourneau, so I'm definitely not saying his sources are wrong. But you said the Warriors are going to be playing poker, and we're going to get or expect reports like this to where teams will tell you they're out on a couple players. And they very well may be, Stani, but this seems like a smokescreen to me to come out and blatantly say not just one player, that they're down on two, and Edwards may be their guy, leads me to believe what you said, Bonte, teams play poker. And, you know, this is what you put out. So, you know, you can't just take it to the bank that they're going to take Edwards. And I'm reading here, too, some people compared Edwards to Oladipo. And I'm like, if that's the case, I mean, there's no way with – my whole point of this draft pick was to add to Wiggins, Clay, and Steph. And if you're bringing in, let's just say, an Oladipo type, that means Wiggins is out of here. And how does that make you better?
See, I see what you guys are saying, but okay, like here's the problem. Let's say they draft third and get this guy. We all know it's not a good draft, or we're not expecting a lot from these players immediately. So that tells me, like for a rookie like that, it doesn't necessarily mean they have to make any decisions, because the guy's probably going to be a role player for the first 2 years of his career anyway, I would think, if everything goes right. I mean, the other thing is, if you look at, it's going to be Curry, Clay, Wiggins. Well, I guarantee you those guys are going to get some rest next year. When the season, you know, assuming it's an 82-game season, they're probably not going to play all 82. Clay might not even play some back-to-backs, at least early in the year. Draymond, not really part of this equation, but in other words, I think there's enough time to draft any kind of guard and get him enough playing time. And of course, I'm assuming that the guy's not a superstar. You know what I'm saying? That the guy can come in, maybe the first year he plays 12 minutes, backs up Steph for 6 minutes, backs up Clay for 6 minutes. Then maybe the year after that, you know, now he's playing 18-20 minutes and he's your seventh man, and you're starting to think about how you're going to move on from maybe some, you know what I mean? I mean, so I think the problem they have is they're going to have a great pick, but I think in any other draft we're going to have expected more from the player. I just don't think the expectations are high on any of these players, at least for immediate impact.
And, Bonte, real quick, I wouldn't be shocked if they traded the pick, because if you want to get back to the promised land, I told you this, fellas, you got to have somebody that can bang, that can, you know, that can deliver now, that's mature. And if you trade that pick, you might get that said player or players. So right now with the – again, I'm no college basketball expert. I just feel like that person they need, or what you said, Steiny, what I expect is not in the draft. Trade that bad boy and get something of a substance that's already in the league that you know is a commodity that you could help get you back to the Western Conference Finals and NBA Finals.
And Steiny, I get your point, too, and that's a great point about maybe stashing one of these rookies and just letting them develop. But also in the grand scheme of things, in the back of my head when I read this, I thought, boy – I still think the Warriors are going to try to make a run at Giannis. I still think they may try to use this pick in trying to get Giannis Antetokounmpo, meaning like they may draft a player. They may draft a player and sit him for a rookie year, have him come off the bench, play a role, but maybe he shows flashes of brilliance during this season. And then you get that number one pick next year, Minnesota's pick, especially if they don't get a top three pick. Minnesota, I think, is top three protected, so they would, the Warriors would get it if Minnesota had to pick fourth and beyond. Maybe it's part of the grand scheme of things of making an effort to try to get Giannis Antetokounmpo, that big superstar. I don't know, but it just sounds like the Warriors, and it sounds like teams aren't high on this draft class coming in, and that's what this is telling me.
Well, keep in mind, I mean, think about this for a minute. You're the Warriors. You have the let's just say you have the number one pick, but you don't like anybody, so you're open to trading it. You have to trade players with that pick. You can't just trade that pick for a player.
No doubt.
Right. Because you got to send away the money that you're going to get back. So if you look at the way the contracts are set up now with the Warriors, well, Curry, Clay, Draymond, and Wiggins are making monster money. There's nobody making, like, Looney's probably making about five. Everybody else is below five. But those players aren't, I mean, oh, we'll give you the number one pick in Looney. It's like, what I'm saying is it almost feels like it would almost have to be we're trading the number one pick and one of our big boys.
Right. And Wiggins would be the likely candidate.
I guess.
You would think.
Don't forget about the trade exception, too, the $17.2 million trade exception. Or maybe the Warriors are just throwing smoke screens out there. Because You said it, Bonte. I think we're going to get to the point where somebody's going to have to hype one of these players up to make a team bite the trade up to possibly get one of these players. Maybe they need to hear Mark Spears, you know, compare Wiseman to KG or say he has comparable skills like Kevin Garnett. Maybe he needs to hear other people say he's more like Chris Webber. They got to throw some smoke screens out here because it just sounds like the rest of the league or whoever's in this lottery, the top five, top seven, it seems like nobody's biting on none of these players. LaMelo Ball, Wiseman, Edwards, Obi Toppin. So it just sounds like the Warriors are going to have to drum up some interest some way and really hype these guys to say, like, okay, we're going to take this guy and try to get a team to bite. Because it just sounds like this is the wrong year to have a top pick. It sounded more and more like that because there's no clear-cut number one. And usually in a Dow draft, real quick, Goo, you always have at least a clear-cut number one. It feels like that.
And you're right. And you know what? I know it's different sports, but I go to the Niners. They got Bosa, and Bosa was a top pick, and he delivered. He was a grand slam on how he was and what he did for the team. And if you're telling me the Warriors in a season we didn't see happening get a top pick, and all year long we think it's going to be a Chris Webber-like, and now it's a bad draft or it's devoid of talent, you know, that generational talent. Steinie and Bonte, is it fair for me to say if they don't make a trade that this is a continuance of bad luck? The year you get a top three or five.
Wait a minute. Oh, my God. I refuse. No. This team's been in the finals five straight years, and you've just used – is this the continuous bad luck?
Yeah, well, KD got hurt in the finals.
Okay,
Clay got hurt in the finals. And now the year –
You know what? In the grand scheme of things, big deal. This is a – you know what? This year couldn't have worked out any better for him. What do you mean continuation of bad luck?
Well, that's still to be determined. We're not going to have the draft.
How could anybody say the Warriors have had any bad luck over the last 5 years?
Last year was bad luck, Steinie.
No, it wasn't bad luck.
Three chips in a row.
They hadn't had injuries for 5 years.
Right, but the type of sprained ankles and pulled hammies are different than guys breaking their knee and tearing their ACL. And if they wouldn't have got hurt, they would have won.
No,
everybody knows
not,
if the Warriors
have not had bad luck. They just haven't had bad luck.
I'm not saying the whole 5 years. I'm just talking about last year.
No, they haven't had bad luck. And even when they did have a little bit of bad luck, when Kevin Durant suffered that knee injury against the Wizards, remember Martin Gortat pushed Zaza
to that ain't bad luck. He came back. Yeah,
and I got Curry you. Came back the next year when he got hurt.
I'm talking about the finals, fellas.
Last year, sure, it was a little bad luck, but you can't look at it and say, you know what? Injuries catch up to him. Just like the Niners, for example, Harbaugh's third year, they hadn't really suffered injuries. That's that third year when they go to Seattle, all of a sudden you get the injuries. It's bad. It's not bad luck. It's just stuff happens. Stuff starts to catch up with you when you're playing deep into the season every single year. So you can't say the five-year run. I mean, five finals appearances?
And I didn't say the five-year run.
You
just said
continuation of bad luck.
And I'm going off of the – yeah, that's off last year's finals. Let me put it in perspective. Yeah, that was bad luck, fellas. They could have won a championship.
I'm not even giving you that.
I didn't say the whole 5-year run was obviously wasn't filled with bad luck.
Well,
but
even this year's not bad luck. Think about it. This year's not even bad luck because Steph gets hurt early in the season. They were going to stink anyway. Steph gets hurt in game number 4, and it's like, well, you know what? There's a silver lining. We get Steph and Clay back next year. Steph's going to be fresh. Clay's going to be fresh. We're going to play a lot of rookies, give them experience. Oh, and we're getting a top 5 pick. That's actually, this year turned out to be good luck for the Golden State Warriors guru, if you really think about it.
Well, we'll see. And hopefully I'm wrong. All I'm saying is, it's almost like somebody giving me a credit card to go buy whatever I want and the mall's empty. It's like, you know what? Damn, I got the money to spend, but the item I want is not there. So if they do have to settle and take somebody maybe they weren't high on or they can't facilitate a trade, I'm just saying the year that they got a top pick, we'll just say top 5 pick, and Chris Webber or a guy like that is not in this draft, and you would look back on it and say, damn, of all the years to have a top pick, this draft was kind of light. That's all I'm saying. And I could be totally wrong. Wiseman could be the man. Edwards could be the man. Ball could be the man. I could totally be wrong. But
that's not bad luck, because I'll tell you right now, even though this isn't considered to be a good draft, there will be players that come out of this draft. And when we look back 2 or 3 years on who the Warriors draft with this pick, well, we're not going to say, boy, they had bad luck. We're going to say they made a bad pick or they made a good pick. Look, that's keeping the dynasty rolling. I mean,
I just can't get over you two not meeting me halfway in regard to last year's finals when you lose two of your top players to injury in the
same
series.
First of all, Durant was hurt.
But he came back,
Steiny.
He shouldn't
have played in the first
place. Okay, but
he shouldn't have even been out there. That's not a fluke to me. That's not a fluke. He should not have come back. Clay
then
gets
right
hurt. It happens.
Well, Clay had a hamstring injury. Don't forget, and came
but
back.
What do you call
3 days
Steiny?
Later with the hamstring?
I call
it.
Owe that.
I call
they
it the cost
they
of
won
do.
Before?
It's the cost of doing business. It's the cost of going to 5 straight NBA finals. That's what it is. It's the cost of playing 100 playoff games in 5 years. That's what it is. Mm. I mean, you can't expect guys to play 1,600 games in their career and never get hurt.
And I'll meet you halfway on the KD one. He shouldn't have been out there. But we're talking about Clay didn't get hurt in game 1. If he plays a half of game 6 in game 7, if you obviously assuming you win game 6, I mean, we could be talking about 3 straight chips. To me, that's bad luck. And I know you kind of charge it to the game because you've had so much success. You played long. But for those injuries to happen in the sequence they happen, those are
so
man.
Funny. It's so funny. Yesterday, you spent 2 hours arguing that Steph Curry should have made that shot in game 6. You thought it was a good shot.
Still stand
now,
by.
Now, okay, and now you're saying that they've had bad luck. They would have been looking at 3 top championships. How about if Curry makes the shot, they win game 6? Like, you just said, like, why is it because of injury? They had a shot to win the game. You like the shot.
Well, the game 7 would have been without Clay.
Okay. They can't take their chances?
No, totally. Obviously, they would want to take that all day and every day. My point is, the task would have been more difficult without Clay.
So, all right, we come back.
Yeah.
When we come back, should we – oh, you know what? I wanted to get the OJ Twitter.
Yeah,
okay. And I also want to get to.
I got this from OJ.
We'll probably play Guru's question one more time.
No, come on. Oh, let's
what?
Spin the wheel.
Hey, Jim.
I'll tell you what. I tell you
don't
what.
Don't play the question no more.
95795. That's our Chilton Auto Body text line. Very simple. Next segment. Should we play Guru's question once in the next hour or twice in the next hour?
Wow.
Either one.
I don't want
each
to cause
segment,
any accidents.
Each segment
too
will
many,
play.
Too many times.
Should we play Guru, God, the longest question of all time? Should we play that again?
Hey, Jim.
All right. That's all going to be brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.